From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
I'm pleased to announce that after detailed and intensive discussions with the Iraqi authorities, culminating in a meeting with President Saddam Hussein on Sunday afternoon, I have concluded an agreement with the government of Iraq on the
UN Secretary General reaches an agreement with Iraqi President Saddam Hussein in Baghdad. We'll look at resistance around the world to a U.S.-British airstrike, from protests to war taxes. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. In a major step toward ending the crisis with Iraq and forestalling a U.S. military strike, U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan won a written agreement from Iraq to give weapons inspectors unlimited access to Saddam Hussein's presidential palaces.
I'm pleased to announce that after detailed and intensive discussions with the Iraqi authorities, culminating in a meeting with President Saddam Hussein on Sunday afternoon, I have concluded an agreement with the government of Iraq on the issue of the United Nations weapons sanctions. In my view, the terms of this agreement, which have been concluded in writing, are acceptable and remove a major obstacle to the full implementation of relevant Security Council resolutions. I will so report to the Security Council immediately upon my return to New York on Tuesday.
Kofi Annan, the UN Secretary General, speaking from Baghdad hours ago. He was signing the agreement with the Iraqi Deputy Foreign Minister, Tariq Aziz.
What happened in reaching this agreement between the Secretary General, my president, and the Iraqi government is that the goodwill he brought with him, not the American or the British built up in the Gulf, and not the policy of saber rattling. It was diplomacy, wise, balanced, United Nations will diplomacy that enabled us to reach this agreement.
Although Secretary General Kofi Annan will not reveal the details of his agreement with Saddam Hussein until he presents a report on his Iraqi visit to the Security Council this week, United Nations officials said today, but the outlines of the accord and its limitations have emerged during 3 days of meetings. Under the accord, Iraq to inspections of what it has defined as 8 presidential sites that were previously off limits, including a variety of buildings and grounds enclosed in 3 compounds in Baghdad, 3 more around Hussein's birthplace in Tikrit, north of Baghdad, 1 in Mosul at the edge of the Kurdish area of northern Iraq, and Basra, a southern port city. Iraq has been persuaded to drop the time limit of 60 days it wanted to impose on inspections at presidential sites. The agreement is still subject to UN Security Council approval, and Washington has reserved the right to bomb Iraq, regardless of what the other council members decide. The Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, says it's possible that Annan will come with something that we don't like, in which case we will pursue our national interests. Added, that is what we are determined to do. Meanwhile, Iraqi leaders said today that Baghdad's with the United Nations to defuse a crisis over weapons inspections was a victory for the Iraqi people. The Iraqi Revolutionary Command Council said in a statement carried by the Iraqi news agency, quote, "Today is the day when the will of Iraqis was victorious over the will of evil. It has empowered them. It is the day that Iraqis achieved progress while their enemy retreated. Its endeavors to do evil and distort the truth by telling lies has been weakened." Governments around the world reacted with optimism and relief today, hoping that a new UN-Iraq pact could avert a U.S.-led attack against Iraq. China and Russia, two of the harshest critics of the United States' tough line in the standoff with Iraq, expressed strong support today for the accord brokered by Kofi Annan. Russian President Boris Yeltsin said Russian diplomats had helped avert a military shutdown, China also signaled its approval. Japan, which has asked the United States to refrain from military action against Iraq during the Winter Olympics, which ended on Sunday, was cautiously optimistic. The FBI again searched the home of a Nevada man released from jail Saturday after he and another man were arrested last week on suspicion of possessing anthrax, a biological warfare agent. He was freed after tests showed that the substance was a harmless animal vaccine. The second man, still in custody, faced a hearing today. And Monica Lewinsky's attorney rejected in a TV interview allegations that Clinton confidant Vernon Jordan worked to find a job for the former White House intern. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. We first turn to, in our program, War and Peace Report, that we've been bringing you over the last few weeks on Democracy Now!, a report from Baghdad. This is a report co-founder Voices in the Wilderness. Voices in the Wilderness is a Chicago-based human rights group that was founded after the Persian Gulf War, and it has been challenging the embargo against Iraq for 7 years. They have sent numerous delegations to Iraq, defying the UN-US sanctions. Kathy Kelly has been on a number of those delegations. She joins us from Baghdad. We spoke to her just a few minutes ago, where she talked about the response in Baghdad to the Kofi Annan Tariq Aziz Saddam Hussein Accord. Well, Kathy, this is quite a historic morning, although we'll see how it ultimately pans out. What is the reaction in Baghdad right now?
Of course, there's relief that it would seem that the decision on the part of United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan and President Saddam Hussein here to sign a document for a peaceful resolution means that it seems there won't be an immediate bombardment. But I have to say that I was a bit surprised at the skepticism people felt. And I guess if you could imagine what it would be like to have a vast fleet of weapons of mass destruction poised and ready to fire on the shores of the United States, then, you know, you might get a sense for how the people feel here. They're very, very skeptical that they won't at some point still feel the blows of bombardment, and yet glad to know that these steps have been taken, and I think there's great admiration for the desire to use diplomacy on the part of Kofi Annan and for his words today. I think one way to liken it would be almost as though people sense that they've got that they're on death row, that you know, they've gotten a stay of execution, but that the executioner's blow might still fall on one of their family members or one of their friends or on any individual with whom we talk, because if you just contract a serious infection, you're marked for deep, deep trouble and possible death. There's such a paucity of medical supplies, of medical relief in the country. And so people will believe that the United States is poised and ready to do anything to them, having already experienced the deaths of hundreds and thousands of children.
Well, you know, we don't know the details of the agreement that has been hammered out between Kofi Annan and Tariq Aziz and Saddam Hussein, but we assume part of it that won't get as much attention as Saddam Hussein allowing unfettered access into the weapons inspection sites is some kind of light at the end of the tunnel for alleviation of the embargo.
Well, we really do hope for that from here, and we hope that every effort that was made to oppose military strikes against Iraq will now be harnessed and galvanized into concerted campaigns to just blast these sanctions, to get the truth out there that there is a weapon of mass destruction in this country, assuredly, and it is the sanctions. And that, I mean, you cannot say that President Saddam Hussein of Iraq has killed a million people, but you can say that the United Nations, United States, economic sanctions have done so. And it's time to say that Iraqi people have suffered enough. The time to lift these brutal criminal sanctions is now. And, you know, it's one thing for me to try to condense ideas about the sanctions into sound bites, but it's quite another to hold a woman in your arms who's sobbing because her baby is right next to you and the baby is breathing its dying gasps. And that was my experience last week at the Al-Mansour Hospital, and that experience has been repeated by members of our team who fanned out to Basra, to Mosul, to Fallujah, and here in Baghdad. This is a truth that people in the United States need desperately to know. If we're to have any democracy, we've got to have all the information. And a crucial piece of information is that these sanctions are constantly, relentlessly killing children.
Kathy Kelly, can you describe the peace encampment that you've set up across from the United Nations headquarters in Baghdad?
Well, this is an orange tent that's bordered by panels that bear pictures that children drew. Children across Iraq have drawn pictures of their experiences of the war. And, you know, a lot of these kids, 7 and 8 years old, have lived under the experience of sanctions and war their entire lives. But some of the older kids drew some extremely moving pictures of, regular, average, everyday life, but with bombs falling down on the traffic and on the, with flowers and birds and people out doing their gardening, but bombs falling down on them. And then our signs say over 600,000 children have died. Operation successful? ? And then another sign says desert storm plus economic sanctions plus thunder in the desert equals desert slaughter. And then we also had a sign that said we support Kofi Annan's effort, use words, not weapons. And we felt really very good about being able to display these signs and other banners. And people honked all the time as they drove by. It's actually a very busy road. And we understand it, 24 Italians should be due there any moment. And, in fact, other internationals will be coming from other parts of the world. And I think it's a way for people to constantly try to offer a window to people in their own countries, for us, for people in the United States, to the reality that here in Iraq, there is a nation of 23 million people, people just like us, people who want to live.
In just a few minutes, we'll be talking with one of the Italian delegation that is coming to Baghdad to stay in the peace encampment. But can you finally describe for us, at 3 o'clock this morning, it was Eastern Standard Time, that the Kofi Annan and Tariq Aziz press conference took place to let us know that a deal had been struck. What was it like in Baghdad?
Well, there were big smiles on the faces of people. In fact, we were there as Kofi Annan drove into and out of the conference, and you could tell by the looks on the faces of he and the entourage surrounding him that people felt positive. And on the streets, I have to say that there is relief, but it was mixed with a sense of skepticism that with the fleet still poised and, you know, ready to fire, people don't feel all that much at ease. And I think that certainly the reality of the economic warfare and the possibility that that could drag on relentlessly is very real for people. And yet I think people do sense a light at the end of the tunnel and want to place great hopes in Kofi Annan's very fine diplomacy.
Kathy Kelly, co-founder of Voices in the Wilderness, speaking to us from Baghdad, Iraq. I spoke with her just a few minutes ago, responding to the Kofi Annan announcement of an accord that has been reached between the UN Secretary General and Iraq, Tariq Aziz and President Saddam Hussein. In fact, Kathy Kelly is also a war tax resister. She doesn't pay her taxes because she doesn't want them going to the Pentagon. We're going to talk about that later in the show. We'll be speaking with the head of the National War Tax Resistance in Monroe, Maine. But for now, the phone number of Voices in the Wilderness, which is a Chicago-based human rights group, is 773-285-7544. That's 773-285-7544. They have issued a statement from Iraq underscoring the need for an aversion of a U.S.-British airstrike against Iraq, underscoring their support for an accord, but also calling for an end to the embargo against Iraq.
The drums of war.
That's why you have military to fight.
The job of leadership is to prepare the court. It wouldn't take nearly as many troops as it would last time.
Now, if they come up with some solution, is that in our national interest?
Getting rid of Saddam.
At Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, we dance to a different drummer.
Virtually the entire world is either pleading, urging, or warning us not to go to war with Iraq.
See, we never expected from a great country, superpower like America, to bombard a shelter.
Good God, y'all! What is good? Absolutely! Get said again!
You're listening to Democracy Now!'s War and Peace Report, and you can tune in every weekday for it. Right now, we're going to turn to activists around the country, peace activists who've been organizing protests. There were a number this weekend from San Francisco to Olympia, Washington, to the East Coast, as well as international protests. In a little while, we'll be going to Rome, as well as to London, where thousands of people gathered over the weekend. But right now, we're joined by some peace activists in our studio. We're joined by Chris Nye, who is a spokesperson for the War Resisters League. Also, Deidre Sinnott with the International Action Center. The International Action Center has been described by Associated Press as ground zero for the anti-Gulf attack. We've also been joined by Charles Margulies, who's with a group called Westpac. That's Westchester People's Action Coalition. They have a very interesting and creative protest that's coming up this week. But first, let's go to Deidre Sinnott. Deidre, can you tell us, the International Action Center has a very interesting website at iacenter.org that has really shown over the last few weeks the number of protests that have been taking place around the country. What happened this weekend?
Well, this weekend, significantly, there was a demonstration in Washington of about 3,000. And then on Sunday, demonstrators met Clinton outside his church, where presumably he was communing with God. And they told him not to murder any more Iraqi people, to lift the sanctions, and not to bomb.
You know, interestingly, on that protest, which was a group of about 30 activists outside the church, as President Clinton came out, they started ringing the bells so that you couldn't hear the protesters. And they rang those bells until President Clinton and Hillary Clinton got into the car and drove away. But the signs were very clear. And they said things like 1,500 Iraqis dead and wag the dog, 1,500 Iraqis being the number of Iraqis that the Pentagon estimated on Friday that they would kill if they did 4 days of 24-hour-a-day saturation bombing.
Yeah, we have to be sure that we don't believe that this crisis is truly ended, even if there is an agreement that the U.S. ultimately signs off on. The goal of the U.S. is still to control that oil, and that this, while this immediate crisis may be over, the troops are still mobilizing, so we need to continue to mobilize. There were a lot of demonstrations over the weekend all over, like in Kingston, New York, they had a teach-in. I was in Boston for a teach-in where there was 400 people at MIT. In San Francisco and New York, there were huge mobilizing days for the February 28th demonstration.
And in San Francisco, that especially says a lot because of El Nino. I mean, you're talking about some very wet protesters.
That's right. Well, our protests have been slightly soggy in New York each time as well. But they were out in Arizona. I hope they had better weather there, as well as Lawrence, Kansas, very, very political town. I'm surprised Albright hasn't gone there. Cambridge, Massachusetts, as I said, had the teach-in. Detroit had a protest. Eatontown, New Jersey, Reading, Pennsylvania, Clam Lake, Wisconsin, Austin, Burlington, Vermont, Seattle, really all over. And internationally, there were a lot of protests over this weekend as well.
We also got a call from Olympia, Washington, where there was a protest over the weekend with a couple hundred people turning out. Well, let's turn to Chris Nye of the War Resisters League. What have you been doing? And also, you could describe what the War Resisters League does. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of it, but not quite sure what you do.
The War Resisters League is a pacifist organization that's celebrating its 75th anniversary this year, and we've been participating with a number of other groups to try to respond to this crisis. Several of us participated in delegations to various missions at the UN to discuss our concerns with officials there, and we've also been involved in some of the protests here in New York City.
Can you tell us about your visit? Both, I guess you went to the Iraqi mission to the United Nations as well as to the U.S. mission.
Yes, and to several of the other missions as well. There was a very powerful and poignant moment at the U.S. mission when a member of our delegation described in great detail the words of the Iraqi bishops asking that the sanctions be lifted and the really desperate plea that they have issued on behalf of the Iraqi people. Immediately after that statement, a member of our delegation said, well, I'll ask you, directing the question to the U.S. Representative, the same question that Jody Williams asked when the landmine treaty was signed, which is how many more children have to die? And the U.S. officials had no response to our questions. There was a very poignant, powerful moment, silent moment during our meeting there. We didn't expect to get much out of that meeting other than to press our views and concerns with the U.S. not bomb and that it lift the sanctions, and we communicated those concerns.
What were the groups involved with these visits?
Fellowship of Reconciliation, War Resisters League, Catholic Worker, Peace Action,
Pax Christi,
yes.
And what about the Iraqi mission? What did you talk to them about?
At the Iraqi mission, we expressed our both concerns about the possibility that the U.S. would bomb, about the impact that the sanctions have had. We also expressed our concern about actions that the Iraqi regime has taken in the past, particularly its war against Iran, that the U.S. has, people in the U.S. have largely been silent about. And we had a very, cordial conversation. We both recognized that we were kind of confronting powers far beyond the control of anyone in that room. But we're at least able to have a kind of a human dialogue and discussion in the midst of this international crisis.
We're going to break and find out about a creative protest that's taking place this week. And we also encourage you to call in and let us know about protests that you've done and also protests that are happening. Because as you know, every day on Democracy Now's War and Peace Report, we bring people reports of protests around the country and around the world. If you want to call it in, you can call us at 212-564-7702. That's 212-564-7702. Or you can fax us at 212-564-5359. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute.
I've been waiting for something to happen for a week or a month or a year. With the blood and the ink of the headline and the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you think that you've heard it before. How governments lie to their people and how nations are driven to war. There are shadows on the faces of the men who fan the flame. To those wars that have fought in places we can't even remember their name. On the radio, talk shows and TV, you hear one thing again and again. How the USA stands for freedom and how we come to the aid of a friend. Well, who are these ones we call our friend? These governments killing their own. Or is it the ones who can't take anymore? So they pick up a brick or a gun or a stone. They're alive in the balance.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!'s War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Well, we are joined by Chris Nye of the War Resisters League, Deidre Synod of the International Action Center, and also Charles Margulies from the Westchester People's Action Coalition. Charles, we've been highlighting people's protests around the country. You have a particularly unusual one. In fact, you have just filled our studio with boomerangs.
Yes, with boomerangs, we're going to have a protest on Wednesday. But I wanted to mention first, I'm glad you mentioned the protesters holding signs about Wag the Dog. Over the past couple of weeks, WestPAC activists have been outside movie theaters outside of Wag the Dog, handing out flyers that say, "Don't blow it, Bill, don't bomb Iraq." And that's been going on for a couple of weeks. This coming Wednesday, we are going to have a protest in White Plains, WestPAC's headquarters, where we'll march to the post office and mail boomerangs to President Clinton.
Why boomerangs?
Well, we're very concerned about past U.S. arms sales to Iraq. There's a long history of U.S. arms sales to Iraq. During the 1980s, between 1985 and 1990, over 770 sales of dual-use technologies were approved. Only 39 sales were denied, and only five of those were denied by the State Department.
And, of course, when you say dual-use technology, you mean?
Well, we're talking about technology that's useful for chemical and biological weapons, as well as Saddam's nuclear weapons programs.
You know, it's interesting. I was watching Bill Cohen this weekend, the Secretary of Defense, on one of the talk shows, the Sunday talk shows, and he was talking about some of the reasons why people should hate Saddam Hussein, saying that he had killed his own people and also killed a million Iranians. But this was at the time that the U.S. was supporting Saddam Hussein, a small fact he left out.
Yeah, absolutely. Interestingly, during the 1980s, when there was somewhat of a ban on arms sales to Iraq, there was one exception to that ban, which was sales to protect the head of state, the Iraqi head of state. So Saddam Hussein bought millions of dollars worth of U.S. technology to protect
himself. Wait,
you have
to say that again. Explain that?
There was an exception in between 1980 and 1982 for U.S. arms sales to Iraq for the protection of the Iraqi head of state, for Saddam Hussein. So Saddam Hussein bought $48 million worth of weapons from the United States, mostly surveillance technology in the presidential compounds that we're now worried about inspecting.
So you're going to be sending these boomerangs that say things like jobs, not war, and Saddam is our creation, and we arm Saddam to President Clinton.
Absolutely. We have two very large boomerangs, about 5 feet long. One says, arms sales boomerang back. And the other one says, bombing Iraq will boomerang back. We're very concerned that this is going to continue the cycle of violence. There will be a huge amount of anti-American sentiment if we continue to bomb, if we continue to use violence as our policy in the Middle East. And that's something we're very concerned about creating.
Chris Nye, you talked about going to the U.S. mission, to the United Nations, as well as the Iraqi mission. On Wednesday, there's going to be a protest, which we'll talk more about in the coming days. Dan Berrigan, Father Dan Berrigan, will be involved with that protest. Can you explain what's going to happen at the U.S. mission this week to the United Nations? Mm-hmm.
The protest on Wednesday actually begins at the cathedral, at the St. Patrick's Cathedral, where people from Pax Christi, Catholic Work, and other groups will be leafleting folks who are waiting for ashes. It's a public education opportunity. It's done with respect for the people who are going to the cathedral. And then a delegation will be leaving to go to the U.S. mission to the U.N. There'll be a rally at the Isaiah Wall, and then others will be risking arrest in front of the U.S. mission to protest U.S. policies in the Persian Gulf.
Well, I want to also find out about a major protest that's going to be happening this next weekend. And I wonder, Deirdre Sinnott, will protests that the International Action Center is involved with change as a result of this agreement that Kofi Annan has reached with Tariq Aziz, the deputy foreign minister of Iraq, and Saddam Hussein?
Well, we're still planning for massive protests on February 28th, Saturday, both in New York and San Francisco. And we expect buses to be coming from the entire region. I know of buses from Boston and Albany, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Washington to come up for the 28th. Our protest is not going to change significantly because the U.S. policy has not changed. The relation of forces has not changed. The Gulf War buildup, the Gulf War II buildup continues. And still, the U.N. has provided no credible evidence that Iraq has the kind of weapons that they keep talking about and get larger and larger and larger in the minds of the U.S. and the media. So we're still calling for everybody to come out on February 28th. The sanctions will be continuing, even if there's a temporary lull in this immediate crisis.
I want to get people's websites and phone numbers so people around the country and also around the world who listen to Democracy Now! On the Internet can get in touch with your groups. International Action Center.
Yes, we're at www.iacenter.org. And our phone number in New York is 212-633-6646.
That's 212-633-6646. And on that website, you can go and see protests that are happening around the country. Chris Nye, the War Resisters League.
We share a website with several groups. It's called the Nonviolence Web at www.nonviolence.org. It's nonviolence without a hyphen. And our phone number at the War Resisters League is 212-228-0450.
That's 212-228-0450. Charles Margulies, Westchester People's Action Coalition.
Yeah, the phone number at Westpac is 914-682-0488.
That's 914-682-0488. And because you have such a creative protest that's going to be taking place with a lot of visuals, I expected to see it. I expect to see it on all of the networks. Well, that's a laugh.
So.
But which reminds me, folks, if there is a peace activist sighting, we encourage you to call us and let us know. We have yet to see a peace activist interviewed on any of the major broadcast networks, on ABC, NBC, CBS, on PBS, seeing actually a peace activist in the flesh, not just pictures of protesters, because often people don't identify with protesters, but a talking head in the studio explaining their reasons why they're opposed to war. Again, we have seen some more right-wing Republicans explaining why they are opposed to the war, and it seems that the media is willing to broaden the spectrum to include them, but we have yet to see a progressive peace activist interviewed on the network news. So let us know if you see one. Again, you can call us and also let us know about your protests at 212-564-7702. too. Well, I want to thank you all for joining us, and now we're going to turn to some international protests. Italy's government, threatened with possible collapse over the Iraqi crisis, breathed a sigh of relief today after UN Secretary General Kofi Annan clinched a deal with Baghdad that could avert airstrikes. Prime Minister Romano Prodi said he was deeply satisfied over the deal. Prodi's 22-month-old center-left coalition risks splitting apart over Iraq if the government had allowed the use of air bases on its territory for U.S.-led strikes. The Communist Refoundation, which is not part of the government but guarantees Prodi's majority in the Chamber of Deputies, which is the lower house, also said they would not back the government if it allowed air bases in Italy to be used. Prodi, in an about turn after pressing for diplomacy above all, said on Friday that Italy was likely to back any military strike against Iraq if Annan's mission in Baghdad failed. In the event of such a strike, the casualties in Iraq could well include 22 Italian peace activists who traveled to Iraq this week as human shields in the event of U.S. airstrikes. On Saturday, I got a chance to talk with one of them. She is the spokesperson for A Bridge to Baghdad, which is an Italian group that formed after the Persian Gulf War. Her name is Ornella Sangiovanni, and she will be going with this group of 22 activists. And when they return in a week, another group of at least 25 Italians plan to go to Iraq. I started off by asking her about the protests this weekend in Rome and around Italy. What happened over the weekend on Saturday? I understand there was a large demonstration in Rome.
Yeah, there was a large demonstration on Saturday in Rome. There was about 2,000 people, which is not bad compared to the size, you know, of the population and to the participation of these days. There was a big demonstration within the framework of a national day against the war. And on this national day, the people decided to have different demonstrations, several demonstrations in different Italian cities. Instead of having one big, huge national demonstration in one city, there were demonstrations taking place in at least 10, if not more, Italian cities. And in Rome, there were about 2,000, maybe 3,000 people having, you know, a march and then a final gathering in a square in Rome.
Can you tell us why it is that you are leaving for Iraq?
Well, we think that it's very, very important in this moment when the Iraqi people are facing such a threat to be there and bring a message of solidarity, to show that not just bombs are coming from the West, that in the West there are people who have helped them throughout all these years of sanction and who care about them and want to bring them a message of solidarity and try for as little as they can do to do something to draw the attention on the problems and maybe stop the war.
You're doing something that's quite dangerous for yourself and the others that are going to Iraq at a time. Well, I'm just looking at the U.S. directives. They're calling on all U.S. citizens to leave Iraq. They're talking about 4 days of 24-hour bombing. Can you tell us what is the philosophy behind going and being what you call yourselves, a human shield?
Well, I'd like to explain that this word human shield should not be taken literally. I mean, we don't want to be we know that there are some risks and maybe even some big risk, but we don't want to be, our idea is not to be heroes, not to be martyrs, not to become symbol. We would like to do something useful. I mean, we would like to, we have not many illusions, but we would like our action to have an effect. And this means that we will try peacefully in cooperation with other people who are already there. There are about 20 people from Britain and the States will try to, you know, to protect, as we said, these sites which are essential to every day, to civil life, but in a way that could be useful. Our idea, I say once again, is not to do something, you know, although risky, but it would also be meaningless. It would be meaningless if 22 or 50 people would die. Of course, everybody would be very sad, but after all, it would have been useless and forget quite quickly. We do hope that our action could have an effect, although we are not politicians, although we, you know, our resources are very limited. We are a small number of people. We don't even have some, you know, like they say today, some important testimonial in our group. But we do hope to find their, the way to succeed at least in something. We want to do something useful, definitely.
So your group is going to fly from Rome to Amman, and then how will you get from Amman to Baghdad, and what are your plans once you're in the capital of Iraq?
Well, we'll go from Amman to Baghdad with a very, very long and tiring journey. We'll go there by bus, and the journey would take a minimum of 15 hours, if not 20. So once we are in Baghdad, we'll see, what's the situation? We'll make some kind of evaluation together with our other foreign American and British friends who have been there for 1 week already. And, you know, we'll be there at the time when the Kofi Annan, United Nations General Secretary, is still ongoing. So we will have to discuss which is the best way to start the mission and which things could be done to be as visible as possible, because one of the main goal, possibly the main goal of our mission and our delegation, is to be visible, to make visible the Iraqi people. This is what we stated. We go there with our white and Western presence to show to white and Western eyes that there are people who are not white and are not Western, but they are still human beings and they deserve to be treated like human beings. We want to make visible the Iraqis by our presence.
Ornella Sangiovanni, spokesperson for A Bridge to Baghdad, which is an Italian non-governmental organization in solidarity with the people of Iraq. She is currently en route to Baghdad in a delegation of about 22 Italians who will act as human shields in the event of a U.S. British bombing of Iraq. Now, of course, we're going to see what happens, because tomorrow UN Secretary General Kofi Annan will be briefing the UN Security Council with the deal that he has just reached with Tariq Aziz, the Iraqi deputy foreign minister, as well as Saddam Hussein. And we will see if it meets the requirements of the U.S. and British governments, the two governments on the UN Security Council that have said that they do plan to bomb. We have yet to hear their reaction to the Accord. Well, we're joined right now, staying with international protests. We're joined by Hugh Stevens. He's an anti-war activist from London, Britain, where there was a major protest on Saturday. Welcome to Democracy Now, Hugh.
Welcome to you.
Can you tell us what happened in London?
Well, for the last three Saturdays, last four Saturdays, in fact, there have been protests organized in London. The first one was very small and very last minute, when we heard where the talks between Madeleine Albright and Robin Cook, the British Foreign Secretary, were going to take place and at what time. Then the night before, we hastily got together a group of people, about 20 people, to go and picket these talks, and we got a lot of publicity. And unlike your experience over there, I had some good studio interviews at that time on satellite TV, not the main TV stations, but we had a lot of international publicity as well. The following Saturday, we had a demonstration with a couple of hundred people. The Saturday after that, one of the major peace organizations in Britain, the National Peace Council, came in, and a very successful demonstration, about 1,500 people, was held. And then the day before yesterday, everyone came back again. There were nearly 2,000 people, and this was a very successful. It was particularly significant for me because it wasn't actually organized by an organization. There was no named organization. There were no big names that we had to come and speak. In the event, Tony Benn MP, who has been the main spokesperson, really, in this country for opposition to the war.
Right, we actually had Tony Benn, the British Labour parliamentarian, on Democracy Now! About 2 weeks ago.
Right, yes. He's on the radio, both in Britain and internationally, and the television the whole time. He's been the main public face of the opposition movement, and he actually did come and address our demonstration, which was very gratifying, but he hadn't been advertised. And so we felt this was a very significant thing because it's the biggest public event there has yet been in Britain in opposition to the British government's war policies in the Gulf. And yet it was almost entirely spontaneous. It was networks of students and so on. Me and my friends, we called the date, we booked the place, we squared it all with the police and all that kind of thing. And it was an extremely high-spirited and very successful demonstration.
Hugh Stevens, we have to break for stations to identify themselves. But when we come back, I want to ask you about what looks like a new policy of British Prime Minister Tony Blair not to allow pictures at 10 Downing Street, particularly when they're kids offering peace proposals. Hugh Stevens is an anti-war activist in London, Britain. He's with a group, well, it's a very ad hoc group. It's called the Proposal for an Ad Hoc Committee, working with the major peace groups in Britain, like Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament and the National Peace Council, as they've been mobilizing against a British and U.S. strike against Iraq. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute.
In that big white house, tall fences all around you, you stand behind the curtain, peeking out at the crowd. While right across the street from you, folks are sleeping in the rain, you ought to be ashamed to say you care about people. You make bombs that leave buildings standing while they lay to waste all forms of life. And all your wise men sit and chat among themselves, trying out their truths on one another. We're dying from the cold, we're dying from the cold shoulder that you turn toward us day after day. We're dying from the cold.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers, our daily war and peace report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we finish up our conversation with Hugh Stevens, anti-war activist in Britain, can you tell us about the Iraqi family, three kids and a mother and a father who joined you all in Britain, in London, for your protest on Saturday of around 2,000 people?
I'm glad you mentioned that incident, because when we hold a demonstration opposite Downing Street, we're only allowed to send one small delegation of six people actually to hand in a petition or some such thing, to the door of number 10 Downing Street, which is the actual official residence of the Prime Minister, Tony Blair. And we always make a point that this delegation normally will consist of children, very often children from Arab families or Arab English families. And this time a family came all the way down from Manchester. It was a mother and father, a mixed English-Iraqi family, and their three children. They came down, they brought their own video camera and a still camera. And normally what happens, we make sure that there's a photo of them passing in a petition to the official concerned. Now this time, we don't know why, I'm still trying to find out, and I'll certainly make a protest about it. It appears that the staff in number 10 Downing Street suddenly made up a rule that a photograph could not be taken in that position. Now, I don't know how this came about, but surely to me it would seem to indicate that they're getting very sensitive about the kind of publicity that they're getting, the kind of negative publicity. As my friend Ornella in Italy was just saying, if there's any kind of activity which brings home to people just precisely who is being killed, it's not just robots or anything, it's men, women and children we're talking about, and anything which gets that message over, I think British government seems to be very sensitive about. So this family, unfortunately, they've gone back without this photo, which doubtless would have been published in their local press up in northern England and would have helped them make an impact.
I guess the very reason that photo was prevented from being taken. Hugh Stevens, as we wrap up, I wanted to ask if your strategy will change now with this accord that appears to have been reached, and we'll see what happens in the Security Council on Tuesday morning.
It's changed in the sense that we are telling people to work all the harder. We feel that the greater hope there is now for a peaceful outcome, part of what has brought that about has been the expressions of public opinion, not only in the United States, but in its closest ally, Britain, and elsewhere. And we think it's more important now than ever to step up all the activities this week. We're trying to encourage everybody to take part in any kind of activity on an emergency basis, absolutely now. And that's the only difference it's making to us. It's still a very dangerous situation, and we'll maybe relax one of these days, but certainly not this week.
Hugh Stevens, can you give us the number of your ad hoc committee that has been speaking out against the war and protesting in London, England?
Yes. Well, it's not even an ad hoc committee. It's a proposal for an ad hoc committee. But you can get me anytime in Britain. That's country code 44-171-436-4636.
Hugh Stevens.
Do you want an email address?
Yes.
justice@easynet, that's all one word, easynet.co.uk.
That's justice@easynet.co.uk.
That's or right.
Or the phone number 011-44-171-436-4636.
That's
Hugh Stevens,
right.
Thank you very much
thank
for being with
much.
Us from London, England. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, and in just a minute, we're going to find out about some people in the United States who are taking protest a step further. They're refusing to pay their taxes, and they may be encouraging you to do the same.
We're dying from the cold shoulder that you turn toward us day after day. We're dying from the cold, as surely as the old young soldier who dies for you every time that you can't have your way. They die for you, they lie for you, every time that you
And you're listening to Dying from the Cold from a CD called Take the Money and Run. And we thank Matthew Finch for this CD. We're now going to turn to something that thousands of people in this country have been doing for a number of years, and they're upping their resistance now. We go to Monroe, Maine, to Karen Mary's daughter, who is head of the National War Tax Resistance. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Karen.
Hello.
Can you tell us, we were talking at the beginning of the program to Kathy Kelly, who we've spoken to every day now from Baghdad during this crisis. She's co-founder of Voices in the Wilderness, based in Chicago, but I just learned from you this weekend that she also is a war tax resistor.
Yes, Kathy has been a contact person for the Chicago Area War Resistor Support Group, which is a war tax resistance group for many years, and refuses to pay her federal income taxes, as do I.
And I understand that if the U.S. and Britain were to attack Iraq, they were going to put out a call from Baghdad, Kathy Kelly, for people in this country not to pay their taxes.
Yes, as it happens, all of the delegation from Voices in the Wilderness that are in Baghdad at this time are war tax refusers and have been refusing to pay some or all of their taxes for a number of years to protest U.S. militarism. And they will be putting out a call, general call to people in the United States to consider refusing to pay some or all of their federal taxes as a form of protest against this renewed war effort against Iraq.
Now, can you explain exactly what that means? Let's start with a smaller tax that a number of people in this country refuse to pay, and that is something called the war tax on the phone bill.
There is a federal excise tax on long-distance calls that was initiated during the war in Vietnam because the U.S. needed more revenues to pursue that war. Now, that money has always gone into the general fund, just like your income taxes do, but at this point, 49% of the general fund is used for past and present war making. So in our minds, that makes it primarily a war tax when you're talking about practically 50% of it. And people who want to use that form of protest send a note each month to the phone company with their bill saying they're refusing to pay the federal excise tax, and they withhold that amount. And generally they give that money away to groups that are doing the kind of work that we think federal dollars should be doing, health, education, those sorts of things.
What has been the penalty for people who don't pay, for example, just that small portion of the phone bill?
There's very little risk involved in that form of resistance because the phone company doesn't have the legal right to disconnect a person's service. They're simply acting as a collection agent for the IRS, and it's up to the IRS to attempt to collect the money. Because for any one individual it's a small amount, the IRS hasn't typically bothered to go after that money. When we add it up together, it's a nice sum of money to give away to things that are affirming human life.
But if the phone company does try to cut off your phone if you don't pay that small excise tax, what can you do?
Well, we have materials on the IRS regulations and some various decisions from public utilities commissions, and basically people take those into their phone company and say, wait a minute, you can't do this. And on only a couple of occasions in the last 10 years has the phone company actually turned off service, and then only for a few days, and when they got it that they weren't supposed to be doing that, they turned it back on. So it's a pretty slight risk.
Now let's go up a level, Karen Mary's daughter, and that is to people not paying their taxes. What are the various ways you can withhold taxes?
Mm-hmm. People can refuse to pay a symbolic portion of their federal income taxes. Those who are under the withholding system often practice what we call W-4 resistance, which is that they inflate the number of allowances on their W-4 form in order to have less money withheld from their paycheck, and then at the end of the year they have an amount that they can refuse to send in. Some people reduce their withholding to zero and refuse to pay any of their federal income taxes, since even if you send in a dollar, half of that will go for war. Some people even refuse to file and have nothing to do with the IRS from their end.
What happens to these people?
The most likely consequences, if at all, and I want to make it clear that there are many people in our movement who have never faced collection efforts from the IRS, myself being one of them, and I've been a very public figure for many years, they often don't bother. We're not extremely wealthy people, and so we're not talking about huge sums of money, but what we're doing is considered illegal in the eyes of the government. So if they do anything at all, the most likely consequence is that they will go after a bank account or someone's wages. Now, they have to leave a certain amount for people to live on day to day, but they can, in fact, seize money in those ways.
I understand some people, I'm thinking of a couple of people in Western Massachusetts who've undergone some serious repercussions for not paying their taxes. People like well-known activists over the years from the war, now organizers around campaign finance reform, mm-hmm. Randy Keeler.
Right. It's very rare. What happened to them was their home was seized by the IRS, which is a very rare occurrence. Randy and Betsy have said repeatedly that they are willing to risk their home rather than to pay to destroy the homes of thousands and millions of people elsewhere. That is a small price to them to risk losing their home compared to the risk that the people of Iraq are facing from our bombs.
If people want to find out more about their particular story, I know that there's a documentary that has been produced called An Act of Conscience that is narrated by Martin Sheen.
That's right. And people can get information on that film from the producers. That's Turning Tide Productions. And they're at 1-800-557-6414.
That's 1-800-557-6414.
Yeah.
We're talking to Karen Mary's daughter, who is the head of National War Tax Resistance. Karen Mary's daughter, how long have you refused to pay your taxes for?
I've not paid any federal income taxes since 1981. So that makes it 17 years.
And what has happened to you as a result of this?
Only positive things thus far. It has forced me to look at my lifestyle and the whole issue of U.S. consumption. We wouldn't need such a huge military in this country if we weren't, in fact, consuming a much larger share of the world's resources than our population warrants. It has put me in solidarity with many poor people around the world, opened my eyes to the economic impacts of military spending on this country.
Have you done with the money that would have gone to the U.S. government?
I have redirected it through our local alternative fund, which is called the Maine War Tax Funds for Life, and each year around April 15th, we make grants to groups that are providing housing, health care, education, working for nonviolent conflict resolution. So I'm redirecting all of my taxes each year in that way.
And the groups that you're recommending that people give the money that they don't pay to the government if they choose not to do that, either through the federal taxes or the tax on the phone bill, what are you recommending right now?
Right now, we're recommending that people redirect tax money to material aid for Iraq. One possibility is the group that Kathy Kelly is with, which is Voices in the Wilderness. Their phone number is 773-784-8065 in Chicago. The other group is Jubilee Partners, which is in Comer, Georgia. Don Mosley, who's a war tax resister, is going to be leading another delegation to Iraq in the next week and taking material aid with them, taking money to purchase medicines in Jordan that will go to Iraq. The number there is 706-783-5131.
And finally, why don't you give out the phone number of the National War Tax Resistance? Because I think what people get confused about is what you do if you're not going to pay taxes. And it's mm-hmm. not just a simple act of not sending in mm-hmm. your income tax forms and the money.
We're happy to provide counseling. The number is 1-800-269-7464. That's 1-800-269-7464.
And what will they get if they call up that phone number?
We have a basic packet of information that we send out to people. We also have a website. It's www.nonviolence.org/WTR. And people can get information there as well.
Are there April 15th tax day actions that are planned around the country?
Yes. Every year we have about 50 affiliate groups around the country, and those groups plan activities in their local communities, leafleting, alternative fund grants to other groups, street theater. And we have a list of those groups, and we're compiling the list of actions for this year.
Well, Karen Marysdorter, I want to thank you very much for joining us from the National War Tax Resistance. It's based in Monroe, Maine. And again, that number is 1-800-269-7464. That's 1-800-269-7464. And I want to encourage people to go to our website, Democracy Now!, so that you can see the different groups that are doing things around this possible U.S.-British airstrike against Iraq, which has certainly not been put off, at least at this point, although an agreement has been reached by the U.N. Secretary General. We'll see what happens in the U.N. Security Council tomorrow. You can go to our website at www.pacifica.org. That's www.pacifica.org. And you can just click on the Iraq Watch icon, and you'll find out, be able to hear all the programs we've done so far, find out phone numbers for different groups, etc. And we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 212-564-7702. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can call 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. Democracy Now! Is produced by Dan Coughlin, Hisu Ku, and Jeremy Scahill. Thanks to Matthew Finch for the music. Errol Maitland engineered today's program. Julie Drizin's our executive producer. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! War and Peace Report.